Good morning, friends. Please bear with me a few moments and hear me out, for I'm dealing with the burning and pressing issue of our day, and I'm concerned. To the best of my knowledge, I'll be speaking for God and for millions of unborn babies who never lived to see the light of day, but suffer a cruel and inhumane death by abortion. I speak this to the shame of a great nation who in the past has enjoyed blessings from God such as no other nation under heaven has known. I'll begin with this scripture. To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, Ecclesiastes 3:1-2. Then it goes on to say in verse 7, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. I realize there are times when it is best not to speak. This the scriptures say. But it also says, there is a time to speak. That time has arrived for me, so speak out I will. Three times in the scriptures, the term an untimely death is mentioned. If a death was ever untimely, it seems to me that abortion would be that untimely death. At this time, I will not go into the details of explaining the gruesome manner in which these abortions are carried out, but let it be sufficient to say it is enough to make one sick at stomach and heart with scars of guilt and condemnation, often lingering for a lifetime. Now consider this thought-provoking commentary given by Jackson Kane over Radio KTOK in Oklahoma City. I quote, Kane's World, January 24, 1984. Who speaks for the dead? In all this decades-long struggle between those who favor abortion and those who don't, the dead have not spoken. Abortion is a thing without a middle ground. There are no arguments sufficient to change the mind of one convinced of the right of it. If one is sure of abortion's necessity in an overpopulated and oft-times cruel world, not one or 1 million words can change that conviction. Nor can words move a mind sure of the immorality inherent in the killing of millions of unborn children. So who speaks for the dead? We bandy phrases and philosophical attitudes back and forth, playing our God like badminton, using the unborn fetus as the bird. Score one for you and one for me. During our little game, the womb is silent. Those who support the concept of unlimited abortion stand firm upon their individual rights. The body belongs to woman, and the right to kill is hers. Those who oppose tell us the concept is immoral and a violation of human rights. But who speaks for the dead? If the atheists are right, then abortion is merely the cleansing of an animal, unwanted by its dame. But even if one accepts the premise of a godless universe, the killing of a rational animal, though unborn, is on the face of it wasteful and a shortchanging of future generations. If one believes in a supreme being, it is much more. It is the destruction of life given for a purpose in trust and expectation. And if one accepts the existence of afterlife, there must be an accounting. So who speaks for the dead? Perhaps they will speak for themselves at a later time, and their words will be terrible to hear. Jackson Kane. Well said, Jackson. Thanks for Kane's World. It is time that someone spoke for the unborn, and that time is now. Even one guilty of murder must have someone speak for him and plead his case before the court before he is convicted. If that person is unable to pay for the counsel, then the state must do so. But by no means must he be put to death or sent to prison for life without someone speaking for him. What crime has been committed by the unborn that they should be forbidden to see the light of this world? Did not the same God create those who inhabit it as these who have never arrived? Does not the blood of these unborn millions cry unto the Lord for a day of reckoning? Will they have nothing to say in that great day of judgment? I think they will indeed. And will not their accusing fingers point to the immoral and corrupt young men and women who refuse to accept their presence, lest their own shame should be exposed before the eyes of all the world to see? I say the sin of abortion is greater than the sin of infidelity and immorality, One sin by no means justifies another. And while on this thought of their blood crying unto the Lord, let us go back to the experience of the two sons of Adam and Eve. Because of perhaps jealousy and a wicked heart, Cain rose up and slew his brother Abel. And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. Genesis 4:9-10. Who will answer for all the blood of the unborn millions? Those responsible for it. That's who. The prophet Jeremiah was hated by his enemies, and some of them wanted to put him to death. Listen to his reply. As for me, behold, I am in your hand. Do with me as seemeth good and meet unto you. But know ye for certain that if ye put me to death, ye shall surely bring innocent blood upon yourselves and upon this city. For of a truth the Lord hath sent me unto you to speak all these words in your ears. Jeremiah 26:14-15. His blood was innocent. The Lord would hold them responsible for taking it. But he didn't resist. He said, I'm in your hand. Look at the parallel. The unborn is unable to resist effectively to gain his deliverance. That life is in the hands of others. But I say, know ye for certain that innocent blood is being brought upon the takers of this blood. The Lord has sent me to speak all these words in your ears. Some things apparently seem right for those who believe in abortion. Let us examine some of them. First, the population is rapidly growing and the fear exists that the food will run out on this earth for all the people. Then there would be mass starvation for all. So why should children come into homes where they're not wanted? Wouldn't it be better that they were never born? Some parents-to-be are not suitable and have no time for children, so why not abort the birth before they're born? Wouldn't this be better? The world is overpopulated with poor people. Why should they be born at all? Should they be brought into the world to starve? So what is the answer? I, for one, would like to address these questions. I acknowledge I don't know all the answers, but who can tell when the food is going to be depleted on this earth? God fed the widow and her son when the drought was in the land. The prophet Elijah also got a cake and some water. The resources of the Lord are not limited. Isn't that a poor excuse that we may all starve? But they say, we're too busy making a living. We're unable to support another. Do you really think that is a problem? I have a suspicion that the underlying cause is selfishness. The fact is, the lifestyle and gaiety of the evening parties, the accumulation of earthly possessions and pleasures would be cut short. Homes are broken, so there's no time for the unborn. I see I've chosen a subject too big for the time allotted, but let me hasten. Here's a brief look on the other side of the ledger. Some of the greatest joys life has afforded for Frances and me have come from our children. Often as she fixed evening meal, Frances would say, It's almost time for Daddy to come home. What a joy it was to have that welcome awaiting for me. There was a time when I could pick up one or two of the waiting children in my arms or carry them on my back. But as they grew and more came to join their number, I was unable to hold them all at one time, but our hearts were plenty big for them all. There were none that we wanted to give away. No amount of money would have induced us to part with them. No earthly job was worth more than our family. There is a great satisfaction in knowing we've made a contribution to society. We like to feel the world is a better place because of those who carry our stamp, which has been impressed upon the lives of those who were entrusted into our care, and it will be for good to others. The influence of godly parents are priceless. A priceless portrait. I have a masterpiece of art hung up on memory's wall. It is a portrait of my dad when I was very small. I can't forget when Dad hitched up the wagon to the team and let me go to town with him, which made come true my dream. He bought the things a farmer needs to till the fertile ground, and when the wagon bed was full, we soon were far from town. He added up his coins and made the team halt in its tracks. The man shortchanged himself, he cried. I'll have to take it back. I thought he meant he'd take it back next time he drove to town. But soon he left his wagon seat and stood upon the ground. He said, son, drive the wagon home and help them milk and feed. I've got to take a dime to him who sold me garden seed. But we're 4 miles from town, I said, as I begged Dad to wait. In just a half a mile or so, we'll pass our barnyard gate. He cried, my boy, I'm tired, but I must trudge back into town and get this matter straightened out before the sun goes down. But it's just a dime, I said, and you're not to blame. He sighed, my son, it's more than that, for it involves my name. What if the Lord should call me home this very night, in fact? I don't presume my friends would know to take the 10 cents back. I live each day aware that I will stand before God's throne and that I'll give account for dimes I've spent which weren't my own. I saw him bravely turn toward town as I toward home did start. 'Twas then a priceless masterpiece was etched within my heart. I gazed through tears until I saw him fade behind a curve. I vowed right then if I grew up, my daddy's God I'd serve. The years have flown since that resolve when I was merely 8. And Dad, all tired, walked back to town to set the record straight. I wonder if all daddies know that one such deed alone can do more good to make boys straight than all the sermons known. Selected. Abortion, be it far from us. Let us shun it and all the avenues of sin which lead in that direction. My prayer is, dear Lord, deliver me from participating in that which brings guilt and condemnation. Until we meet again, this is Willie Murphy saying God bless and keep you always, and a very cheerful goodbye.